I guess it's Lane Arias using process-oriented psychology, that means process worker, at the same time American with Jewish roots, so that's why I would like to talk about Polish-Jewish relations and the war trauma from which this nation suffered. And on 19th of April, anniversary of uprising in Warsaw Ghetto, I went to Umschlagplatz and I met 19-year-old AK soldier. And he told me a few terrible stories about how Germans treated Jews during the war. And at the end, he asked me, "You look educated, so please tell me why people are doing such terrible things to each other." And that was obviously a very difficult question, so I would like to pass it to you. You look educated, so tell me why.
First of all, it's great to be here back in Warsaw. And I lived here for 4 years, and it's great to be back. And obviously that question is unanswerable, but I'll do my best anyway. I think really there's a continuum between feeling on the one hand like a victim. Everybody basically has that inside of them. Oh, somebody did me wrong. Somebody did something bad to me. I'm hurt by somebody. And then on the other hand, being a perpetrator. The perpetrator is the one who can do something really bad and be really hurtful. And there's a continuum between being really a victim on the one side and being really a perpetrator. And everybody, basically, everybody prefers to feel that somebody did me wrong. And therefore, whatever I do is because somebody did something bad to me. And that's just a natural human thing. I did a 6-year project funded by the UN in the Balkans, working with Serbs and Croats and Muslims after the war. And everybody I talked to there, everybody I worked with, always identified as being the one who was hurt by the other side and not the side who was doing the hurting. And that's just a natural human thing. And then, therefore, when you feel hurt by the other side, then you feel justified in doing something bad. And then there's misinformation campaigns, disinformation campaigns, propaganda campaigns that are whipped up by people who have an agenda. And then they can get people into that feeling of being hurt, and now we're not going to be hurt anymore. And that's then how that happens on more of a mass scale. But it's the same thing that happens. It's at somebody's kitchen table. You know, oh, well, you hurt my feelings, so then I'm not really going to hold back about what I say to you.
And do you think that happened in the 30s, last century? Did Germans have this feeling of being a victim?
Absolutely. After the First World War, and then all the terrible things that happened after the war, and the economy was in ruins, and they felt hurt and put down, and then they were looking for a scapegoat for that, and Hitler found that scapegoat was international Jewry and the terrible capitalist Jews who put us down and gave Germans then more of a sense of power again. I think the other thing is that there's another continuum. There's a continuum between somebody who on the one hand can be a hero. You know, there's a lot of Poles also who rescued Jews. There's a continuum between somebody who can be a hero and do something really risking your own life to help somebody, and then kind of going down the continuum, somebody who's kind of supportive but not really risking your life, and then somebody who's just a silent witness and just kind of letting things happen and not saying anything, and then somebody who can be kind of hurtful, and then somebody who can be really a killer. And that's a continuum between one side and the other. And so where people fall on that continuum is really, that depends on the person, that depends on the moment, and that person's history, and also how much fear they're in themselves and how much pressure they're under.
When I listen to you, I find some hope that being bad is not part of our nature, but this is a question of unsolved problems, maybe lack of consciousness.
I mean, I think it's both. First of all, I think that everybody has everything inside of us. We all have a killer inside of us, and we all have incredible, loving, compassionate parts of us too. So first of all, it depends which plants are we going to water, you know, but it also depends on our history. And as everybody knows, people who have been abused have more of a tendency to become abusive themselves. So then that happens in the culture, in the whole culture as well. It happens in a family system, but it happens also on a larger social level as well. So I think it is possible, and I know it's possible, to actually work with people and to help people to find that more compassionate side of themselves. Yeah, I think that's a hope.
So what can we do? Is there any hope that we will stop that? We people are doing mass genocides for the centuries that happened during the Second World War, but then in the 90s there was a war in previous Yugoslavia again and again, and these kind of stories are happening all the time all over the world. Are we able to learn anything? That's very sad.
I think that is very sad, actually. And in my experience in the former Yugoslavia, after the war there, you know, once I was working with a group of Serbs and Croats and Muslims, and the Serbs said, "Well, to the Croats, look what you did to us in 1995," and the Croats said, "Well, look what you did to us in 1991," and then the Serbs said, "Well, look what you did to us during World War II," and in 15 minutes we were in the 14th century. And so that is true, but then what happens is that somebody like Milosevic or Tudjman or somebody then whips up that old hurt and uses it in order to gain power and uses it for their own ends. And that's really the dangerous part. And so when these hurts are unprocessed, when nobody's going in there and working on that and working with people on one side and the other and working together to be able to hear each other's pain, then it's much more likely that the misinformation, the disinformation, and the propaganda can then whip up that frenzy again. The work that I was doing with my colleague Arlene Odergon and also Jean-Claude Odergon in the Balkans, we were going and working together with mixed groups of Serbs and Croats and Bosnians and helping them to be able to develop compassion for one another by telling their stories and hearing each other's pain and realizing that there's a common humanity underneath. I think that's the hope.
That is something you can do as a process worker, somebody who has proper tools. But what can do somebody who is, for example, listening to the radio now? What can we do to stop this mechanism which start war and genocides?
I think that's a great question. And I think the first thing to remember is that any time we think about the past, it's present in the moment. Any time we think about what happened in the Second World War, just the fact that we're thinking about it means it must be here somehow inside of us. That's a basic process-oriented concept. So that means that we're thinking about, wow, okay, what the Germans did to the Poles, what the Germans did to the Jews, the relationship between the Poles and the Jews. And we're thinking about, for instance, oh, yes, well, those Poles who stood up, the righteous ones who saved Jews, yes, that's right. Or we're thinking about, oh, those Germans who did those bad things. And that we have an opportunity in every moment to change history right now. We have an opportunity in every moment. Am I going to choose to be a righteous one? Or am I going to choose to be a perpetrator? Am I going to choose to be a silent witness when I see things going on in my own backyard, when I see homosexuals in Warsaw being ridiculed or something like that? Am I going to just be a silent witness? Am I going to be a perpetrator and join in that ridicule? Am I going to be one of the righteous ones and stand up against that, even though that may endanger me, right? That's a way that we can live history right now. Instead of saying, oh, wow, so many Poles saved Jews, why don't we become those Poles right now who are the righteous ones in a lot of different areas? Also, with anti-Semitism, if you notice anti-Semitism happening in Poland, what are you going to be? Are you going to be a silent witness? Are you going to join in it? It was a kind of a funny joke. Maybe you're going to go tell it to your friends. Or are you going to stand up against that, even though that may kind of endanger your place, your position in your workplace or in your family? What are you going to do? If you're proud of those righteous ones in Poland, be a righteous one now. The past is happening now. We have a moment. Every moment is a chance to make a decision like that.
The past is happening now. That's also about Polish-Jewish relations. We heard about Polish anti-Semitism, but at the same time there is a Jewish anti-Polonism. How is it possible that it's still happening after so many years?
That's right. The past is happening now, and I think that's a natural thing for that to happen. But then our question is, what are we going to do about it in the moment? And I grew up in my family with a lot of stories. My grandparents were from Poland. I grew up with a lot of stories my whole life about, things were difficult in Poland and the pogroms and the anti-Semitism and stuff. So yes, I grew up with kind of an anti-Polonism. Now I decided to combat that and to come and live in Warsaw and to make friends with tons of my friends here and to live a different kind of a life. And I also experienced anti-Semitism here.
How is it from your point of view? Because when Poles think about anti-Semitism, I think it's mainly that they think it's not so present.
Well, this is, first of all, I want to pull back and talk about this psychologically for a moment. From the point of view of privilege, everybody has a certain privilege, and everybody in other areas has less privilege. So, for instance, as a white man in America, I have a privilege to not have to suffer about things that black people suffer about. As a man, I have a privilege to not have to suffer about things that women suffer about. As a heterosexual who's married with kids, I have a privilege not to have to suffer about things that homosexuals suffer about. That's just a natural thing. So, as a Pole, you have the privilege not to suffer about things that I, as a Jew, suffer about. So when I would walk through the streets of Warsaw and see anti-Semitic graffiti, Żydzi wons Polskie, or, you know, Jude raus, or Żydzi do gazu, or something like that, or the Jewish stars hanging from the gallows, or if somebody didn't like Legia, they would put an L inside of a Jewish star, or if they didn't like Polonia, they would put a P inside of a Jewish star. Why is that a Jewish star means that something's bad? But that's normal in the graffiti. At least it was when I was living here. It's less so now. I didn't see so much graffiti like that when I was walking around today. Some, but not as much. But my friends, they didn't see that graffiti because that's a privilege to have as a Pole, not to have to suffer about that, not to have to notice that. Now, it's the same thing as a Jew, as an American. I have a privilege not to have to suffer about things that Poles suffer about, right? So I'm not necessarily noticing, unless I'm really finely tuned into it. I am not noticing every day the slights and the put-downs and stuff that happen from Westerners to people who grew up under communism or Jews to Poles or something like that, American Jews to Poles, right? Again, as an American, I don't have to suffer about that all the time, but a Pole does. So this is the natural thing about privileges, and it goes back to what I said earlier. Everybody is more comfortable usually, unconsciously, feeling themselves as the one who's being put down rather than the one who is putting someone down. So that's a natural fact of privilege.
You said how you feel when you see the anti-Semitic graffiti, how they touch you in a personal way. But the problem is that people think that somebody else is doing that, some minority and, you know, few naughty boys, yes?
It's true. That's true. I appreciate you saying that because that's what I hear all the time. And that's it's absolutely true. That it's just those crazy kids. Yeah, just those kids. They're just getting the stuff out. So I have a couple of answers to that. One is that, where did those kids learn that? They must have learned it at home somehow. And the second thing is, when we witness something like that, when we notice something like that in our streets, or we hear somebody say something like that, do we just think, ugh, those people are just crazy, but keep it to ourselves? Because if we do, then we are again the silent witness. And do we want to be a silent witness? Or do we want to actually stand up for a better kind of a world? I remember when I was living here and I went to Wumja. My grandmother was from Wumja. And I went to the Jewish cemetery in Wumja. And I was so looking forward to it. I had heard, actually, that an Israeli president had gone there in 1993, I think, and it was all cleaned up and made beautiful. And when I went there in 98, 99, practically all of the tombstones were pushed down. It was all overgrown. There was anti-Semitic graffiti everywhere. Žydžių vons Polska. So, yes, where are the ones who cleaned that up? Right? Are we just going to be a silent witness to that? Or are we going to say, oh, that's not okay? Are we going to go and wash those tombstones off? Or are we going to make them upright again? Or are we just going to say, oh, that doesn't matter, it's just some crazy kids?
So what is important is to change the point of view and feel as a part of minority. How the group without privileges can feel in a such situation, yes?
Exactly. And in the same way, when I'm home in the United States and there's Jewish people who talk to me about, oh, Poland, you lived in Poland, and they have that tone of voice about that, then it's my job, again, am I going to be a silent witness, or am I going to be a hurtful killer and say, oh, yeah, those Poles, or am I going to be a hero in that, am I going to be one of the righteous ones and say, don't put down Poles, that's not fair. You know, millions of Poles died in concentration camps too, and they say, really? I didn't know that. You know, so... Right? It's like, who are we going to be? Are we going to identify just as the victim who then has, when you identify as a victim, then you have a righteousness. Then you feel justified to put somebody else down because they hurt me. No, they're bad anyway. Right? That's how it starts. Right? The Serbs said, oh, but those Croats, yeah, they hurt me. So then I am a hero to kill them, actually. Or the Croats say the same thing about the Serbs, or the Croats and the Serbs say that about the Bosnians. Yeah, those, oh, they're terrible. Those Muslims, yeah. Right? We're having the same thing now with Muslims in the United States, right? Oh, yeah, they're bad. Therefore, we're good to go and bomb them. So it's the same thing all over the world. But who's going to stand up and say, that's not okay?
It's a huge amount of work, yes, because these separations are still so present. For example, 70th anniversary of Ghetto Uprising was well celebrated in Warsaw. You know, people from government, ordinary people, lighting candles. But on the other side, there were articles in Israeli newspapers that there was a beautiful celebration, but it was also a public relations event. So even somebody noticed something positive, he or she also was looking for what's wrong. That's sad.
It is sad. And it's a natural thing. Let's say there's two people who live together in a family. You know, and one of them is always drinking and always hitting the other one. And then that one starts to change, right? They stop drinking and they're now good. That one who was hit, it's going to take a long time for that one to trust the other one again. The one who used to drink is now bringing flowers and acting nice and being genuinely loving. That one who was hit for a long time isn't necessarily going to trust. Wow, those flowers, is that just a public relations campaign? Yeah, I can't really trust that other one anymore. And so that's a natural thing. Now, I also want to say, who's who in that situation, right? The Jews feel like the one who was hit, but also the Poles feel like the one who was hit. That's the natural thing. So are we going to trust each other? That's a really big thing, is like learning to trust the other side, learning to reach out and say, let's move forward with our common humanity.
That looks like a long way to go, long time to water the plant of love and compassion.
It's a long way to go, And it happens in every moment. Every moment we have a chance to change history. Every moment we have a chance to notice our tendency to not trust, to notice our tendency to want the other side to trust me, right? That's the natural tendency. When is that side going to trust my side?
Who is going to do that first?
That's right. And normally people think, I'm going to win because I'm going to make them do it first. Whereas I think, I win if I do it first. If that's happening in my family, I think, I win if I say I'm sorry. I win if I say, wow, how am I contributing to this problem? Rather than only seeing how the other side is contributing to it.
And the last question, not so heavy. You are also a musician, and I think that the Jewish music is very popular in Poland. In Krakow, you can listen to it every day. In Warsaw, there are concerts and festivals too. Maybe music is the way to cross the differences.
I mean, what music does is it gets beyond the story. It's beyond the, you did this to me. Or I did this to you. No, I don't want to admit that I did it to you because you haven't admitted yet that you did it to me. It gets beyond that whole story, and it goes to something that's more universal. I think it goes down and it touches our common humanity.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. Cześć.